We've never talked.
Who are you?
We should mention Chris and I have never talked to each other directly, so this is a really weird episode.
Yeah, we created Besties as a means of communicating with each other for work reasons.
Safely.
Yeah.
In a safe, prescriptive environment.
Sure. Oh, people don't know this, that every episode of Besties is scripted.
I said prescriptive. Like formatted?
No.
Yes, it is also scripted. Yes, thank you for reminding me. And we are not doing a show right now. This is just us talking. It's like in the Cold Open, how there's always accidentally audio left. This is that part, because we're just talking to each other. Don't you agree?
Well, I like looking at my script of improv opportunities. Woodworking. How is that going?
I made a secret bookshelf.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you pull the book and you pull the book on the secret. It looks like a bookshelf, and uh-huh. You pull the book on the bookshelf, one certain book, and it opens a secret door to Sydney's office.
Is it a secret bookshelf if everyone in the family knows how to do it?
I haven't told my kids. Oh. Well, we don't let them touch books, yeah. So they know the rule. Kind of across the board, so there's no worries there. Only leap pads. My kid's favorite book is Touch Buttons with This Dumb Frog. Till You Learn Math.
They keep poking the front of the book waiting for something to happen. And
yeah.
It never changes.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, get that book out of your hand right now.
It doesn't have in-app purchases.
Anything you need to learn is on YouTube. I've told you this. Go watch this family pretend to have fun.
Bon Bon the baby monkey is not going to have fun without you having eyeballs on him.
People don't realize how much of YouTube is families pretending to have fun. It's dizzying. My kids watch these videos constantly, and it's just families pretending to have fun. They're like, we're at Target today. We're going to eat only orange food. It's like, why are you filming this? Why are we watching it? My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game to travel with.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I also know a good game for when you're on the road.
And it's the summer, and that means you just got the two of us. Russ Frushtick is out today. Griffin McElroy is in the process of moving to the beautiful East Coast of America. We wish him all the best. And what you got with this one is me, and you got Chris Plant, and we're just going to be talking about games to travel with. Traveling, a long trip, how do you travel with games? Plant, I guess normally I'd ask you to explain that, but if you haven't gotten that, that has somehow escaped you. They're basically games when you're not at home.
Yeah. You actually really nailed it. You summarized it pretty well.
I took a lot of meat off that bone, huh? Because it was just sort of that. When the big dog eats, Plant, sometimes he doesn't
eat the whole meal. I'm just ambling up to the bowl, and there ain't no kibble left.
But we'll talk about all that right after this break. Plant and I, we have to travel for work a lot. Do you still travel for work a lot?
A little bit of a pause right now. But normally, when things are not a global pandemic and the economy is not, on the threat of a recession, I'm always in the plane.
What is your, like, when you're like, okay, I need to, for me, my stuff that I'm going to do games with is always on my person. It's in my backpack.
Sure.
What are you loading up? Is it game dependent on what your setup is, what you're bringing with you, or what's your rationale there?
Yeah, I mean, for most of the time it was the Switch, but I've fully switched over to the Steam Deck. Unless there is Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which we'll talk about later, Some brand new Switch game. I'm just gonna bring the Steam Deck because it has so much of my backlog, and that's the thing that I like to do most of the time when I'm traveling. It's like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna have 10, 20 more hours than usual to play video games this week. That's a perfect opportunity to go back and play something that I've never tried before. How about you?
Yes. I sorry, I was thinking about how jealous I am of you that my Steam Deck is not I don't have one. So that's very sad for me, as you can guess.
But it's going to be here soon. It'll be here by the end of the year. Did you not see the news?
No, I didn't
all,
see the news.
All Steam Deck orders are shipping before the end of the year.
Well, we'll see about that. I'm not sure about all that. But I am distracted by the fact that I have not received my Steam Deck. I apparently got an email about a reservation like at the end of June, just looking through my emails here, but I don't know what the story was with all that. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get a Steam Deck or not. But you know what? If I don't, that's okay, because I still got the Switch, which my own Switch is the ideal for me. But a lot of times I don't have a game that I'm actively playing on the Switch because I don't play it a lot at home. So a lot of times the night before I travel is going to be research to figure out what games are on the Switch. And can I say, that's extremely hard. They do not make it easy to separate the wheat from the chaff there.
No, well, they make Polygon's existence really easy. Because, you know, by having a store that makes zero sense, we know that people are going to be coming to Polygon.com or somewhere else on the internet to be like, what the hell do I play? Because it's like, you know what it reminds me of is the App Store at this point, where like most of the stuff, if you actually went to the App Store and you just searched games and did not have a specific thing that you wanted, oh my gosh, you would just be surfing through junk. And that's, I mean, like, it'll be like Hentai Fighters 4, and it's a, like, you know, crossword puzzle game.
I would download that store. For sure.
I mean, yeah, true. Same. I mean, do you have trouble with that? You mentioned, like, not having something that you're playing actively. I have run into that problem before where I will be like, you know what? I'm finally going to play the original Final Fantasy VII, and I download it. And then I, you know, go on my trip, I get on the airplane, and then I start some big game, and then I remember, oh, big games are slow for like the first 3 hours. And the last thing I want to do when I'm on an airplane and don't want to think about being on an airplane is like a slow 3-hour grind to like get through the tutorial of a JRPG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame you there. That is tough.
So like what do you play then?
It's basically been serendipity lately. You know what I played, at your recommendation, I played AI Somnium Files.
Oh, how did that go?
I really liked it.
Yeah?
I played the first one. Did you play the first one?
No, I played Nirvana Initiative, but I've heard the first one is great.
I can get down with it while I'm traveling, especially, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of my, like, for me, what makes a travel game is it's, like, more specific. When I am traveling, or basically, I like visual novel type games sometimes if there's a hefty interactive element to it, which maybe that's not a visual novel anymore, I don't know. But still, I like those kinds of games, but I don't usually have the attention span for it when I'm at home. Like I can you know, focus on something for a few minutes, but usually if it's just like reading, you know, there's many other things to occupy my time. So when I'm traveling, it's usually the one time I have like focus to sit down and like actually do a visual novel type thing. And this one has been like really, it's really well voice acted. There's tons of voice acting and it's really well done. And the plot points are, like, not these weird – a lot of times with these games, they get into, like, weird sort of personal tangents about each of the characters in ways that you don't really care about. And this is very focused on, like, the central crime. Like, everything kind of ties back to that, the thing that you're trying to solve. And the back and forth on it is really nice of like, you're in a real world investigation where you're looking for clues and investigating people. And then there's these segments where you are brought into their mind basically. And you have to, it's very interesting. It's a dream world where to get to the information you need, you have to like do things in the dream.
Puzzles.
They're
kind of
puzzles is like, yeah, puzzles like, is,
yeah.
It's like not even, you have to be down with like dream logic, right? Like it's not even like I put the, you know, maple syrup on the cat hair and it makes a mustache. It's like I pull the, there's one where you like have to stop a lightning storm and you do it by pulling on this rod that's in the ground and that makes a mast rise up above a cage and then the lightning starts hitting that mast instead, right? It's like you do not know a lot of times like what the game wants you to do. And it's just sort of like a lot of like random surrealist guesswork, which is a very strange game mechanic. It is not something that I've like experienced before.
Yeah.
It's like trying to find meaning in a haiku or something, whatever muscle of your brain that is like that. It's very sort of ephemeral.
Yeah, I mean, it's Inception meets Persona is like the closest comparison I could think of. Mm-hmm. If I had to sell it to somebody who has no interest in visual novels or a game called AI Insomnium Files, Nirvana Initiative, or whichever version, right?
Right.
Like, it has that same thing that Persona has where, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, what is the kind of bad thing that happened to this person that is motivating them to make their decisions in the real world? You know, like, what is the subtext of their life? Now I really want to go back and try that one. Like,
yeah, it's surprising. And I really do. This is not, I was actually rushing to try to make some progress on it before I left because I really had this sense of like, once I get home, I won't have the focus for this anymore because it is not a twitchy type thing. It is very much a sit and read and ponder, but it's pretty good. I gotta say it is well done. And also there's a very generous fast forward button. So you can kind of like, if you're getting the idea of the conversation, you just need to move things along a little bit. It's great. But I really was enjoying that. I also will tend to bring a laptop and because I end up stuck in hotel rooms a lot.
Yeah.
So I will bring a laptop with an HDMI cable where I can get like deep into something that I've been meaning to play, but have not again, like spent the time to actually make the jump.
Like what would be like the most recent example of that?
I played Plague Tale.
Oh yeah.
I think it's called Innocence.
Yeah, and the sequel comes out like in like 2 months soon.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about it on the show. Kind of get into it because like story-based games like this, I normally play all of them, and for some reason this one, well, it's not for some reason. There's a lot of rats, and I don't enjoy that.
were you waiting for like a mod that turns them on to caterpillars?
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
What was the game that was like that?
There was the game that where you were in the backyard and it's like very Honey I Shrunk the Kids on Xbox. The one where they had a no spider mode and it just turned all the spiders into like big orbs.
Yes. Okay, good. Yes, that is the one that I was thinking of. Yes. But this is interesting. Like the rats are so okay, God. You play a sister and her brother who for reasons, story reasons, are thrust out of their home and forced on like kind of an odyssey where everyone is trying to catch them for various reasons. And you don't have a lot of like weapons at your disposal. There is like you have a sling that gets progressively better and you get like different little potions and stuff that you can put into the sling that like knock guards out or set them on fire or make their helmet melt or whatever. And you're basically using that to get through. There's very few sequences where you're like, where it's like, kill them all. It's like very much like, I have to get out of here. And that is the thrust of it is using these to like get past guards. But there's also this huge mechanic where there is this rat-based plague, and when the rats are present, they will be anywhere that it is dark. So there's a puzzle element to getting through these rat-based segments that is like, can you set a bale of hay on fire so you can have a place to run to where you'll be safe from the rats? Because if you're in the dark with the rats, they eat you, game over.
Yeah, and when you say rats, you don't mean like four or five rats.
I don't mean eight. I mean like, think of it as like water. I mean, it's like it is that many rats. It's like so many. It's like so many. They could have done with fewer rats, I think. There's so many rats. But like if you knock out a guard's light source, he'll be plunged into dark with your sling. He'll be plunged into darkness and then the rats will eat him, that kind of thing. It's like really well performed, really well written. And these segments are like, it's that great thing in games where like, you don't really see a mechanic used the same way more than a couple times, right? Like it's not like you're methodically going through and like, okay, I melt that guy's face. Now I melt that guy's face. Now I melt that guy's face. You very much have to like, it's puzzle game like in that sense where you're like having to bring in new mechanics constantly.
There's so many ways to kill people with rats. You would have never guessed.
There really are, and we don't think about it or talk about it enough. It is also, I have found, if I'm at home and I have free time, there's usually like a bajillion things that I should be doing. If I am traveling, though, a lot of times I really don't have anything to do at that exact moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, it is very essential to me to always have some sort of phone game. I have to have something on the phone that's like, pick up, play it, don't have, I don't need to focus on it that much. I just, it's like kind of brainless.
So when you say phone game, I think of like three different types of ways this could go. Okay. There's like the free-to-play, idle game. There is the, the addictive games, like a game dev story, where it's like, okay, for 3 days, this is all I'm going to think about. And then there's like Hearthstone, right, where it's like a kind of traditional game, but it's on your phone and you can play it whenever you want. Which of those three is your kind of go-to?
Well, I want to avoid something that requires network connectivity.
Okay.
So I don't normally do that. What I tend to do is something that I do this a lot where it's like, there's not enough of these games. So I end up playing the ones I've played before, right? Like you can only play You Must Build a Boat so many times. And I do that pretty frequently. Like I'll just go back and do it again. But the ones that I got into this trip it's been a long time and I just wanted to, is A Dark Room and The Ensign. Have you?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so did you play Candy Box?
Oh, yeah, man. Love Candy Box.
Love Candy Box. Dark Room is sort of like, it's based on the, it's not based, it's inspired, I guess, in some ways by Candy Box. You can play both of these on your phone, and it's very much a game where you're like, you start with a fire, and you light the fire, and the fire, and it's all text-based and ASCII stuff. You light the fire, and then someone is drawn to your fire and they start bringing wood, and then that wood builds a bigger fire and more people are drawn. And then you assign some of them to build traps. And then some of those people build huts so more people can come. And you're like basically building a community it's tick based. So it's like every, 10 seconds or whatever, more wood comes through. And that is like you can imagine the arc from there, right?
Yeah,
You strike out from your village and you have to go exploring in other places, find new weapons, new resources, all that stuff. But it's all like text-based and very chill. Yeah. And then The Ensign is the sequel, maybe it's a prequel, to A Dark Room. Those are both on browser too. You can play them on browser or on iOS is where I end up playing them. But I really love games like that. It's basically not an idle game. It's too interactive for that. Too much exploration, but it's like it's the same idea of like cumulative power over time.
Yeah. Did you played Universal Paperclips, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was gonna say that it sounds like that sort of game.
Love that. Might have to give that one another run too.
Yeah,
it's been a little bit.
Oh my gosh, there's a iOS app version of it now that supposedly does not destroy your battery, But when I tried it, it definitely did. Wow. Like, literally, I did that terrible thing where I was about to travel for an entire day. I was in New York, saw that the app came out, downloaded it, and was like, oh, great, it doesn't eat your battery? I'm going to play it all day today. And then it was like halfway through my day, and my phone was suddenly dying. But yeah, those games... Yeah, I mean, I love idle games that are not tied to in-app purchases, where it's like, yeah. Hey, this actually, the mechanic itself is quite fun. We're not going to make you, you know, try to buy extra gems to make it go faster, because, like, I don't want it to go faster. I want to enjoy its rhythm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I am not very good about always having an iOS game. It used to be Drop 7, but that kind of faded, and... I have some stuff that I pick up now and then, but I don't know. Like I have a lot of trouble. If I pull out my phone, I feel like I'll end up like looking at work stuff or like some other distraction. But I do keep kind of my go-to travel games on my Switch. So I have, you know, I mean, we've talked about Spelunky a million times on this show. We don't have to talk about it more, but that is my favorite of those sorts of games. I used to literally bring my Vita around until Spelunky came out on the Switch, just because it was such a good game to have if I had 30 minutes to kill, you know, on a cab ride or something like that. Do you have any games like that are your like defaults for being on the go?
Slay the Spire is the other one for me like that, where it's like you can jump back into that whenever, and it is just as fun as the first time you played it. And there's a new fan made expansion, which is so cool. What a cool idea. It's called Downfall, and it's like a free fan expansion to Slay the Spire that you can just get and play. It's got it lets you play as the bosses. It also gives you a new character class called the Hermit that it would get to into Slay the Spire mechanics to explain, but it's cool. But I was like, you know, I need to refresh on Slay the Spire real quick before I hop into this expansion. Oh, and no. You can guess how that went.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 20 hours later, like, fucking Slay the Spire is the greatest game. I don't know why I ever stopped playing this. The game is absolutely the best. I love Slay the Spire, and it is so fun. I eventually did get into Downfall, and it is excellent too. But like, there was also a new character in Slay the Spire that I hadn't beaten it with before. So I had to do that first. But I love Slay the Spire. I return to that constantly.
I remember the one phone game that I want to put in your brain, in everyone's brain. And I think we maybe talked about it briefly on the show, but have you tried Point P?
No, I don't think so.
Do you remember that game Downwell?
Yeah.
The mobile game. So that developer made a new game called Point P that is a Netflix game. So already, you know, brace yourself. But it's so worth actually downloading. And the
wait, what? How do you spell it?
POINPY. Point P.
Point P.
Point P.
And that's a bad name.
So I said that at first, but then saying it out loud, saying Point P over and over again feels good. Feels real good. Point P. It's like reverse Downwell. In that it's, you know, a vertical platformer, but you are going up and you kind of shoot yourself at enemies, almost bust-a-move style. You can see the arc of your character before you actually fire it. Mm-hmm. And you just climb, and your goal is to get to a point where you basically can climb all the way up the tower without ever touching the ground. A little bit of the floor is lava-ishness to it too. Mm-hmm. And while you're doing this, you're collecting fruits to feed a giant cat that is perpetually underneath you trying to eat you alive. And it's just very cute. It's very colorful, and it's effectively free if you already have a Netflix subscription. The way Netflix's mobile games work is you download the app, and then before it lets you play, you just sign into your Netflix account, and then you're off to the races. I believe that they just did this with...
Into the Breach.
Yeah, Into the Breach. Into the Breach.
Yes, I downloaded that Griffin was playing that a lot on tour, so I downloaded that as well. Also, still very good.
Yeah, what a great game. Hey, before we wrap the segment, I want to go back to the question I had from the beginning. What makes a good travel game for you?
I think it's something that is really attention-absorbing, that doesn't, like, that very much, like, locks you in. I think it needs to lock you in with that, like, addictive central loop. And if it has that, I feel like that it is a true worthy time killer, which is not normally something I look for, but there are times when you're stuck on the tarmac and you definitely do need that because it's a long flight and you're going crazy otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. Shall we go to the other side and talk about Xenoblade Chronicles 3? Yes,
let me get a drink. A stiff one for this incredible discussion. We'll talk about that game, the name of which I remember, right after this. Xenogrind Final Fates 4, it's finally here, and Plant is the only person who's played it, so he's the perfect person to talk about it.
I downloaded this, and I was like, you know what? Somebody on this show should give it a try. You know,
and that person was you. First one to think that is the one that has to do it.
I thought I would do that. I thought I'd play, you know, for an hour or two, and that I probably would bounce off, and then we would not talk about it. And here I am, 6 or 7 hours into the game, and I'm having a great time. And we've talked about, you know, like, weed games on this show. My friends, we found the ultimate weed game.
Yes.
It does exist, and it is here. Why is it a weed game? Because there are two parts to the game, as far as I can tell. There are the cutscenes that go on interminably long, but are interesting, but oh my gosh. You think, hey, this cutscene started 5 minutes ago. Surely we're getting to the point, right? No, there's more that's going to come after it. And suddenly 15 minutes, 20 minutes or whatever has passed, you're still just chilling out, learning about an endless war between two factions that kill each other for their precious life force that turns into fire in their eyeballs. And you really start to, you know, disassociate from time and space. And then the other part of the game is a big open world RPG where you effectively, out in the easiest mode, do not need to do anything other than walk up to the enemies, and then everybody just waylays on the characters while you watch.
Fantastic.
There are fighting options. You have, like, they're called arts. So there's the automatic fighting that's mostly about, like, positioning yourself. If you are playing on the normal mode, it's like, hey, I want to be in a healing circle. Very MMO-like. And then you launch your specials, effectively, which you can select and switch between characters at a certain point. All of that, if it sounds complicated, don't worry. You're probably not going to get to it for the first 5 or 6 hours anyway.
Fantastic.
You're mostly just going to be going around this open world. And here's the part that I think would get you interested, Justin. The open world is full of glowing, colorful orbs, and you can see them from very far away. And Ooh. If you have a part of your body that cannot resist walking towards the colorful orb, collecting it, and then seeing another one about 100 yards away, and then going and getting that one, and then just doing that until you've, again, completely lost track of time, then this game is for you. I don't know. There's something about this. It's like connecting with my lizard brain gameplay wise, and that, like, you truly can just zone and grind in this game in a way that is, I don't know, like, really pleasant. I think it was Eurogamer that compared it to, like, just letting a slot machine run in front of you, where it's just like you're just getting, you know, new fruit popping on and wondering if it's going to reward you this time. There's a little bit of that. And then very quickly, the story. Do you even want to know, Justin?
No.
No? Okay.
Go well, for it.
Here it is. Okay, so I mentioned that there are two effectively, like, I don't know, families, clans that are in a constant war with each other.
Yeah.
soldiers live for 10 years before they get, like, effectively killed by their own army, so they can use that life force to start anew. And you play as, at first, a flutist who plays, when people die, their souls get stuck in their corpses unless a flutist comes and plays a song that sends them to, like, space heaven. And you play as one of those flutists.
Yes.
And you go around fighting, but the other thing that you do in this game, I mentioned going around the open world finding colorful things. Some of those colorful things are dead bodies.
Whoa.
And you go and you play your flute to send them to space heaven.
Amazing.
Which is, I like that you're really muscling to care about this for
me. I'm trying my best.
No, you're doing. God. I mean that sincerely. You're trying.
Okay, good.
And
I'm trying. Good. I'm glad you can sense that.
The only problem with this game being like a weeb game is, I just said all of this out loud, and I feel like I am stoned. Like it's hard to talk about this game in a way that, I don't know, that resonates without being like a little bit out there. I don't know. Okay. It's good. I am liking it a lot. I promise, because I know that there are very diehard Xenoblade fans out there. I will come back to this game. I want to play a lot more before I get into like what the game actually is. Mm-hmm. Because right now, again, 7 hours in, I think I'm still probably another 7 hours, 6-7 hours from where the game starts, because right now I just learned about this like Steven Universe merging power where a character is combined to form like giant mech creatures.
Okay.
And you know, when that's happening, and you're not really out of the tutorial. So
that's true. That's a huge thing to just dump on you like that.
It is. So thank you, Justin.
What does it look like? What are the graphics?
You know, the art design is awesome. The art direction is great, but it has that problem that I feel like we're starting to see on the Switch as it gets later into its life, where a big open world kind of just looks muddy. Like, no matter how great the art direction is, it's doing the thing that like was cool with Breath of the Wild, but now after all these years, like, you know, I would like some of this open world to have textures,
right?
You know, so yeah. The actual like art is really cool. The world is, I mean, kind of Pandora-esque, going off Avatar, okay. Mixed with these like really awesome giant mech designs, like spaceship designs. But yeah. It just suffers. Pokemon Legends Arceus earlier this year kind of had that same thing, you know, where it's like, wait, what actually is this world? Is it just like a series of like colors against flat surfaces?
So doesn't sound like something that's going to bring someone into this who does not already care about this genre. Is that fair?
I think if you don't care about the genre, no. If you care about the genre but have bounced off previous Xenoblade games like me, I think yes. It feels much more welcoming and accommodating than the previous Xenoblade games. But no, this is like a JRPG-ass JRPG. I mean, this is all of the things that you're familiar with, like an obtuse combat system, very, very long cutscenes, especially at the beginning of the game, a very, you know, anime story. That said, if you like those things, it's great versions of all of that. I mean, why I like just kind of zoning out and playing this game is it's so refreshing to play a story that is optimistic. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is weird because it's a game about, you know, two factions stuck in endless war. But it's just an anti-war video game, which is cool as hell that you play as effectively a pseudo-pacifist who is a bard who wants to send people to heaven. Like,
yeah,
it's cool.
It is cool. Sounds like a good vibe.
That's it.
You've been playing anything else?
I mean, a lot of multiverses. I'm big into multiverses. Have you not downloaded it? Justin, it's so good. It's so good.
I just listened to everything I played for you in the last 2 weeks. You know I haven't watched it.
No, you should download it and we can play together. I play as LeBron James.
Okay, one of my favorite fighters.
He is great. I love playing. So, you know, it's like Smash Brothers, but there is team modes where it's 2v2.
Okay.
And when you can get two LeBron Jameses going up against, I don't know, like the Iron Giant and Batman,
it sounds wild.
It is absolutely wild. And like LeBron James, all of his moves are kind of like Charles Barkley shut up and jam, where he's like hitting people with his basketball. So you're either like dunking or like shooting like long distance threes, and the arc will like hit some Iron Giant into, you know, oblivion. But yeah, with two LeBrons, you can actually pass the basketballs back and forth. So you'll have like three or four basketballs ricocheting around the court or the stage, knocking Arya Stark into like the death of hell. It's pretty great.
Oh God, I don't know. I guess I should.
Let's try it. It's free. I think it's like,
how many shaggies can I buy?
I mean, there's a special shaggy that you can get with the battle pass where he's wearing a smoking room jacket. Yeah.
Nice.
He looks nice. He looks very cool. He goes Super Saiyan. That's his special power.
Hey, you gotta love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great game. I mean, and the Iron Giant kills people.
Surprised at how much you enjoyed it?
I thought I would like be kind of tickled by it because the idea of playing as LeBron James and, you know, breaking Bugs Bunny's neck.
The Fortnite effect.
Yeah, yeah. But then it ended up just being really good. And now I'm probably going to complete the first battle pass in the next day or two, which I have not done for a video game ever. I can't think of the last time. It's great. I think you will be maybe a Tom and Jerry main. I could see that.
Yeah, that
maybe a Harley Quinn. You know, it's kind of, can't really tell. You know, what character do you like in Smash Brothers?
I wouldn't play Smash Brothers with my worst enemies.
Okay, then I
guess that makes me a Solid Snake. I don't know.
I think it's a good pick. Have you been watching anything?
Oh man, just some old John Carpenter movies.
Oh really?
Watch there's a lot of listening to Blank Check, and there's a lot that I hadn't seen. So I saw This Trip for the first time. I saw The Thing and Christine. What's the other one? Escape from New York. I saw all three of those for the first time. Never seen it before.
Wow. Which was your favorite?
The Thing was great. I can't believe I've never seen that before. The movie whips ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you watch Assault on Precinct 13 yet?
Yes. That was second, I guess. But it was great. That was a great, great film, too. Mm-hmm. I've been enjoying going through his movies.
Pretty good. Really good. Pretty good at making movies.
Good at making movies for not a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah, and great at making soundtracks. Great scores.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's what I've been into. What are we doing next week, bud?
Next week, we're going to do an anniversary episode for Mortal Kombat. We're going to talk about the best fatalities, the best babalities, the best friendships. We're going to talk about what it was like to actually be alive when that first game launched, which, do you remember, what was it, Mortal Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I remember being at their friend's house and they had the wrong version. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
So embarrassing.
I spent weeks planning to manipulate my grandma and grandpa into how they were going to buy it for me. And let me tell you, it worked. And it was
beautiful. I'm sure we'll hear that harrowing tale.
Norman Pat, you'll finally learn the truth.
It is their like end of the serial killer movie. You're like, wait a minute, this entire time? So did you want to list all the games?
We talked about, you know, we just talked about a bunch of games, and then we talked about Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I think that's it.
Which is more than a game. It's a lifestyle.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, so next week's Mortal Kombat, and we'll have probably some more people than us, but I don't actually care. I've had a great time talking to you.
This is so nice. For the first time that we've ever spoken with each other, it was pretty good.
Yeah, good vibes all around. That is going to do it for us. Be sure to join us again next time for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
besties.